Good evening, White Sox fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Future Sox podcast, Hot Takes and Heaters. My name is Danny Miller. With me tonight is my partner, as usual, Jacob Thome. And if you're watching us live, you will also see that we have brought on our good buddy, Mr. Ian Eskridge. How you guys doing tonight, Jake?
Good.
Yeah. How's things, man, since we last talked?
Good. Been a busy week just with radio stuff. But other than that, had a fun weekend calling basketball and, yeah, back at it.
Right on. How you doing, Ian? It's been a minute since we had you on here, but happy that you could join us this evening.
Yeah, things are good. I don't know, weird last day. I wasn't expecting the trade to happen until mid-year, just because I didn't think that they'd get what they wanted, or at least a couple months into the season. I was hoping for a comp pick, but there is no comp pick to be found in the return, so here we are.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping for the same, but I guess we'll go ahead and break that whole thing down this evening. Obviously, we are in the wake of the Luis Robert Jr. trade here on Wednesday, January 21st. And, you know, we've all had roughly 24 hours or so to kind of look this thing over and, you know, maybe decompress a little bit. And I've had some, you know, I'm just going to go ahead and say it. Like, my entire take on this thing might be a hot take. And, you know, we'll get into that as we go tonight. But, Ian, since we have you on as our guest tonight, why don't you give us your initial response or your initial kind of, you know, feeling towards this whole thing?
Well, I wanted the comp pick, and that did not happen. I have been underwhelmed with, you know, I had seen requests from a lot of people saying, oh, you know, we should trade with the Mets, and, you know, part of the return people had mentioned was Acuna, and he's just not been as much as you would have hoped if you were a Mets fan up until this point. I mean, he did have a couple of big hits in the playoffs, but, you know, tendency towards more of ground balls in the last year have kind of, you know, derailed his value at this point, you know, once a top prospect. So Southside, yeah. Jeff mentions that Moncada just signed with the Angels, so no Acuna Moncada. Not that I was expecting that.
Moncada. I mean, I guess that would have been fun for about, I don't know, 10 seconds, but
yeah,
right? I'm actually glad that that is not a thing for,
yeah. I'm not going to complain about that. That's for sure.
How about you, Jake? What was your initial thought when you got the news that Luis Robert Jr. had been traded to the Mets yesterday evening?
Yeah, I think like Ian said, I mean, it was so funny because there had been talk about, you know, the rumors of him being dealt for so long, and then it kind of comes out of nowhere. And I thought it was surprising that that's what they went for. It makes me kind of wonder that, like, what was the offers beforehand? Obviously, the league doesn't think very highly of Robert, which isn't a surprise. I mean, he's been hurt and not good the last years. There's not, like, a secret player here. Obviously, you look at 23 and you're hoping that you can get back to the level, but that's a lot of hope compared or paired with a $20 million contract. So, I don't know. I don't mind Acuna. I'm actually more interested in Paulie. But we'll see kind of what happens there. Obviously, he's a recent draft pick, so a little bit of a way to go. Coming out of college, some interest there. But, yeah, I don't know. Kind of shocked that they made the move then.
Yeah, you know, my initial reaction was we had been listening, you know, for months now. I mean, honestly, for close to 2 years now that the White Sox were not going to deal Luis Robert Jr. unless they got the package that they felt was fair, you know, or close to fair. My initial reaction was, you know, Luis Ángel Acuña and Paulie were probably not at the top of that list as far as what I was expecting when they're saying things like, you know, we're not just going to trade them to dump salary. You know, there's, I feel like there's some things left to be desired in this trade, but I also feel like they probably had their reasons for doing so. And I'm going to hold off on my points of that for just a little bit here. Cause like I said, right at the top of the show, my take on this thing might be the hot take of the evening for me, because it's pretty much the entire feeling I have is a little bit of a hot take. So let's talk a little bit about what that means when we talk about salary dump, right? Luis Robert Jr. obviously had his $20 million option for 2026 picked up recently, and a lot of folks were a little perplexed by that move. In the time that had happened, and ever since that's happened, it's been a bit of a roller coaster as whether or not he was going to be traded, or you know, the rumors between, you know, at one point there was like 8 teams that were showing interest all apparently at the same time. And we really weren't sure what those returns were looking like and what the offers were. But the last few weeks, maybe last month or so, after signing Murakami and, you know, Kay and some of these other guys, that things had been moving around a little bit. It felt like Luis Robert Jr. was more likely to stick around, as Ian was saying, till probably maybe the deadline. And, you know, you kind of hope that Luis puts together a decent first half of the season so that you can get the most out of him. And then you look at the fact that there's $20 million. I'm sorry, I cannot speak right now. I don't know if you guys can tell, I'm a little congested. Getting a little the flu that's going around, so I'm hopped up on meds, but there's obviously what's that?
Hopped up on goofballs.
Yeah. So, obviously there was the second option year, also valued at $20 million on Luis Robert. So I think it was probably something that made more sense, at least to us as fans, that if he can have a decent first half of the season, you might be able to sell him for a little bit higher value than where he was currently sitting, with the option, especially for the team that takes him on next, to sign him for that second $20 million option if he were to perform. That just felt a little weird that it happened now, right? It feels weird that after all this time that has gone by and more folks were kind of jumping on the wagon of he may not get traded until the deadline. Do you guys have anything to say about the timing of this? And we'll go ahead and start with Jacob.
Yeah, I mean, I had said this on the podcast a couple of times. I thought there was probably about the same value you're going to get for Robert now as you were at the deadline, unless he was hurt. And so I felt like if he played good, the trade value would rise. But again, if he's hurt at the deadline, you can't move him. So, I don't know. I mean, I think this comes.
Oh. Jacob is potatoing.
Yep, looks that way.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't think there's anything weird with the timing, personally. I mean, it's just kind of one of those things where you've got, you know, they're trying to clear up space on their payroll. And, you know, as it's mentioned in the comments, you mentioned, you know, they saved $22 million, you know, 20 on his salary and then 2 million on a buyout, assuming that they, you know, that they did buy him out and of 2027. You know, and it also kind of frees up the spot in the lineup. I mean, not that Luis Robert was your problem in that lineup. I mean, if we're all being honest here, Benintendi being in the lineup is probably the most, you know, thing that you would think about when you think about a logjam in the lineup. You know, he's kind of one of those things where he's making, you know, $15 million a year. And so you feel like you got to get him in the lineup every day. But, you know, you got to, you got that DH spot where you're trying to figure out Teal and Caro, but you also don't want to put Benintendi in left field, really, because he doesn't play left field all that well. So, you know, you go ahead and get rid of your best defensive center fielder, your best outfielder. Just the availability question is huge. And, you know, while his returns have, his offensive returns have been a little bit of a letdown the last couple of years, you know, he still did play center field well. So I don't know as if I'd necessarily say that the timing's all that weird. It's just, I thought that they were waiting for a comp pick, and it appears that they were more trying to figure out flexibility in the payroll. Because in his Zoom call today, Chris Getz did say that he did free up that money and he is free to use that money. So we'll see where that money goes. I mean, we'll talk about that in a little bit. But
absolutely. And I'm glad that you bring that up, because that – to me is probably the biggest part of this whole deal, is that the White Sox did not have to send any money over to the Mets to make this thing happen. And when you talk about freeing up $20 million plus the $2 million, like you said, at any in a potential buyout situation, it gives them that flexibility to be able to do some more things. Jake and I have actually brought it up on the show a couple times in the last few weeks that, you know, obviously there are reports out there that, you know, we don't know how true they are, but it's been whispered that the White Sox want to keep the payroll somewhere between $80 and $90 million on the season. So we'll see what comes of that. I'm going to hit one of these comments in the chat here. Doveman says, spend that money on tradable bullpen pieces and flip a deadline to get the prospect package we were looking for. That's one route. I'm not opposed to that whatsoever, but I think I'm going to offer up some other takes on that. I'm sure Jacob and Ian will at some point in the show. Wolf wants to know, Ian, he's a question for you specifically, who's the best center on the 40 man currently?
So I'd say, I mean, if we're talking defensively, and I assume that that's where he's going with this, I would say it's probably Derek Hill defensively, just because he's got the most time in center field. That said, Acuna's, you know, he can play some center field. He goes in on the ball well, and he has good lateral movement. I mean, I don't know that he's necessarily better than Derek Hill. As far as offensively, I mean, I'd say probably Acuna is probably better than Derek Hill, but I mean, Derek Hill has been kind of, you know, kind of bad offensively his entire career. Maybe Brooks Baldwin is probably possibly the best offensively in center field. But defensively, you know, he's at this point of his career, he doesn't have enough time in center field. He's more of a liability in center field than positive. So,
Roger that. So, saying that, Jake, you know, obviously Ian brings up the fact that, you know, we've got a handful of guys that can play, a fair defensive center field, right? And Benintendi is looking like he's going to be, you know, one of your corner outfield, probably left field, because we all know he doesn't have the arm for right field. I mean, he can barely hit a cutoff man from, you know, half deep in the outfield. So it's a bit of a wet noodle that we got going on out there. What would you say is your best defensive alignment in the outfield right now? Obviously, and I'm saying, you know, right now, because we've obviously opened up some payroll flexibility. Maybe there's a right fielder or another possible center fielder where they can bounce one of these guys to right field on the radar, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But as of right now, what would be your best defensive lineup in the outfield?
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to go best, I think you move Benny to DH, but that's not going to happen. It's hard to kind of plan around that with him out there. I mean, I don't know. There's a couple of interesting pieces. Like, Derek Hill is obviously the best, I think, defensive outfielder on the team. I don't know if Tristan Peters does anything for anybody. But, like, yeah, you're kind of stuck in a situation where, like, Everson Pereira's got to start. Like, Kelnick's not good. Like, they don't have a good defensive center fielder. I mean, Acuna's good defensively. At least the speed is there. I think the arm has looked decent in Venezuela. I'm really not kind of tuned in on that. I know
slightly above average on the arm.
Yeah, I know
he's like a 55 grade, if I'm not mistaken.
Moved around a ton. So I think you'd put one of Pereira. I mean, if you're looking for strictly defense, it'd be Hill in probably right. Union center, just because of the speed and the range, and then good old Benny and left.
So I'll ask you the same question, Ian. Where would you, as we stand at this particular moment, what would be your defensive alignment in the outfield? And I know this is, it's a ridiculous question, but it's fun to kind of play prognosticator, because I don't think that we're going to he's like, it's not fun.
It's terrible. I would say probably, man, that is, it's not a good situation. Probably Acuna in center, and yeah, I'd be Pereira in right field, I guess. And Andrew Benintendi on the bench.
Yeah, right.
And then I don't know, like maybe Brooks Baldwin, maybe Jared Kelenic. I don't know. It's not exactly. James tweeted out earlier today that the White Sox have the worst outfield in Major League Baseball. He's not far off if he's not correct. You know, it's. There are way more question marks than answers. That is for certain.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't agree more, unfortunately. It's not something that I want to be in agreement with you guys. And the only reason I ask is because I don't believe that this is the way everything lines up before it's all said and done at the moment. I'm sure you guys both have heard some of the rumors. Obviously, like we said, Chris Getz kind of came out today and said that he has this availability now to be able to go out and spend that money. We've been talking about it for weeks about, obviously the needs are still probably one more starting pitcher that can eat some innings. You might want some back end bullpen help or, you know, even middle of the bullpen help. And then you probably want a corner outfielder that you feel comfortable starting on a fairly regular basis, or at least be able to platoon with one of these other guys, right? So I don't think that this is the way things kind of play out at the beginning of the season where we stand right now. Having said that, what do you guys feel about the rumors that the White Sox possibly in on Harrison Bader at the moment?
Bader doesn't move the needle. I don't know. You're paying a guy off of a career high season. The underlying numbers were bad. I mean, the defense is good, but I feel like Acuna gives that to you already. And I'd rather spend the whatever it's going to cost him, 10 mil, to go somewhere else. I don't know. He doesn't blow me away at all.
Yeah, Ian? I'm not enthused. I've heard so many names in the outfield, and they're all.
Doo-doo.
Nothing excites me. You know, I've heard Conforto, Grichik, Bader. I've heard a couple more.
Verdugo.
Verdugo, I mean, it's possibly the offensively the best one, but he's terrible defensively. Grichik, at least he can play defense, and he's very good against left-handed pitching. But, I mean, you know, we're already talking about Pereira, Kelenic, platoon in right field at this point. I don't know what you get that's going to I mean you're looking at a guy who's probably going to be 30 23 plus years old, probably, in most of these cases. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's Austin Hayes. I mean, it's just, it's all, it's a, as they say, a poo-poo platter of outfielders out there. You know, it's nothing great.
And the issue, too, is, like, you look in the system. You know, I know this isn't a minor league show, but, like, there's not a ton of outfielders, especially in Charlotte. Or, I mean, obviously everybody, you know, is in on Braden, but, like, that's one of three. They need three new outfielders. So, yeah, I'd be interested to see. I mean, obviously there's anticipation that some of these shortstops are going to move to the outfield, but I don't know. There's just not a lot in the system outfield-wise.
Yeah, you know, I feel like any signings now with, you know, whatever remaining free agents are out there, they're just kind of lateral moves, right? Like, I don't think anything really pushes the White Sox one way or the other. I don't think it really forces the hand of, you know, Will Venable in as far as making, like, lineup decisions or not having to make lineup decisions where he can just kind of plug somebody in and not have to worry about it. So that leads me to believe, and it's come up in the chat already a handful of times, so shout out to the guys that have brought this up. But I hate to even be talking like this and thinking about it, but where do we feel like this leaves the Braden Montgomery situation? Does it change things at all in your mind? Do we feel like he's more important now than he ever was before? I know I personally would like to see him continue to develop. I don't want to see him pushing for a starting spot right out of the gate at the beginning of this season, because obviously he hasn't had a ton of time at Triple A, right? We want to be able to
none.
Well, that's the thing. He moved up three levels in a single season, and still you have to see Triple A. So, like, you know, I don't know if I feel good about that. And I know there's a lot of people out there calling for him to, like, you know, if he has a great spring, like, bring him up. And I'm not in the camp of doing what the White Sox used to do of kind of forcing guys into situations and just grenading their development. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I thought Tauchman made sense for Braden. I mean, if you're going to bring in an older right fielder, I think the earliest Braden Montgomery is going to be up is a trade deadline. I just don't think there's a route. I mean, Ian, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure he's going to start in Birmingham unless spring training goes incredibly well. So then you'd have to make another jump to AAA, get games. I mean, it's just going to be hard for him to advance any time before the deadline. Even at the deadline, I don't know if it's there yet. You know, so the only thing that this changes for Braden, I think, is that now that center field is open, he could play center instead of right. He was kind of penciled in to be a right fielder with Luis there. Now he could be your center fielder if you want. I think that's really all that changes for Braden going forward.
From everything I've seen of Braden defensively, he is destined for right field. He comes in on the ball really well, but his lateral movement isn't quite as good as, you know, I mean, definitely a step down from Luis Robert defensively. I mean, that's not saying that he can't play center field. He can. I don't think it matters. I don't think he's starting the season with the White Sox. I kind of think that he's, you know, going to start in Charlotte, but because of the AFL results and how he played in Birmingham, I would think that he starts in Charlotte and he does, you know, make his way up by June. But I mean, you know, you know, Uncle Ted asks how much different is Braden versus Baldwin. I mean, defensively, Braden is in the outfield is a lot more comfortable. I mean, traditionally, Baldwin is more of an infielder who got put in the outfield because he has played a few innings there, but I mean, he's not naturally an outfielder. And obviously, there is some big power with Braden. I think that, you know, you're for both of them, though, you know, both of them are still pretty young and Baldwin gets some at bats, but he's not getting all of the at bats. So, I mean, he's kind of in the same boat, you know, and it's, this is part of the problem of having, you know, Benintendi and Robert both on the roster, was that they're eating up at bats, and you knew that neither one of them was going to be around for the next, you know, next wave of talent, you know, or the next, you know, 26 man roster that you're hoping to make a run. You knew neither one of them were going to be around. So, at least this gives you a little bit more of a chance of getting outfield time for these guys and more at bats. But you know, the more times you go out and sign these older outfielders to you know, put a MLB level outfielder out there, it's you know, it takes away at bats from some of the younger guys. So I don't know.
Yeah, definitely agreed. And you know, Southside Jeff is brought up a question that, you know, it's been looming a lot here the last month or so, I would say. Jake and I have kind of given our thoughts on this, and I don't think we fully 100% agree on our thoughts on this either, which is fine. I mean, this is a group of guys sitting around and kind of throwing some things at each other. And if we don't agree on everything, it's perfectly fine. Like, you guys like to throw some stuff at us here in the chat sometimes too, which we appreciate. And by the way, I'm sensing a little carryover from the smack talking that was going on last week in the chat. So behave yourselves. It was funny for a while yesterday, but let's keep it civil, guys. Anywho, your thoughts, Ian, on Kyle Teal being able to play a corner outfield position?
So of your two catchers that have been rumored to play in left field or have been in left field, being Corey Lee and Kyle Teal, I would be more comfortable with Kyle Teal in left field over Corey Lee. That said, I don't expect Corey Lee to be here all that much longer. I would be shocked if either of Caro or Teal gets traded. If that happens, I will be upset with whichever one they decided to trade. But I don't think they're going to trade either of them. So,
I'm with you on that one. Monster return or not, I think you got to hold on to both of these guys right now and give them, you at least have to know what you have with the two of them. Obviously, you know, one not even having a full MLB season under his belt. And, you know, the thing is if you trade now, obviously the ceiling is pretty high the value is pretty high just because of what I think the world believes they can do. But you never want to trade that kind of talent away. And again, it's been said over and over again by Chris Getz. He thinks that catching is gold. So as these guys build value, I believe they're both going to take another step this year, which, you know, I don't know how big of a step, but I think they will. I think, you know, obviously that just continues to build value. So if you do eventually trade one of them, it's going to behoove you later rather than sooner. So James Hesterman, welcome to the chat. I had a feeling you would be in tonight. He says, welcome, Ian. James, as you all know, is the man from the Facebook group known as Chicago White Sox Exclusive.
Debating cage.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Wow. I'm telling you, it's the meds, man. I'm all hopped up on Mucinex and Sudafed, buddy. So, anyway, I don't know.
There's nothing like being in the stands cheering on your favorite team. Game Time is your hack to unlocking amazing tickets in just a few taps. Plus, their Game Time guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets at the best price. Fees are always included, so what you see is what you pay. Get the best deals on sports tickets. Download the Game Time app and create an account to start searching for tickets to upcoming games and events. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. Game Time.
So having said what we were talking about, you know, maybe the availability of corner outfielders and what's out there, where do you see the money being spent if Chris Getz is going out there and saying, I have this available to me? And do you see him spending the majority of it or a fair chunk of it between now and opening day? And we'll start with you this time, Ian.
I mean, I think that they're going to go for a starting pitcher and an outfielder. And I don't necessarily, I don't think that if you're going to spend that money, I think you're better off getting the best player and then living with whatever else you get. I mean, I don't know. I think there's many problems here. Is that you know, the White Sox obviously were going to want to fill that spot with the best players that they can. I just don't know that you know, doing the traditional White Sox thing of getting, you know, four free agents that'll fill $20 million instead of going and getting, you know, one great pitcher and then one that's, you know, an outfielder that's just passable. I don't know which one's better, you know. It's you can probably get a bunch of outfielders for $5 million here. Get two outfielders, you know, or get an outfielder and a $10 million pitcher and then leave $5 million over. I don't know. It's a tough thing. I don't necessarily know which route they're going to take. I would rather that they get a top pitcher that they could trade possibly at the trade deadline, something like that. I don't think that any of the outfielders that they pick up are really necessarily going to do anything for the White Sox whatsoever.
Copy that. Jake, same question. I know you had some ideas on this. You probably wanted to get them out there. So let's hear what you got to say. No,
I have an opinion. It's just not a good one. You're so late in the offseason. Like, there's not a ton left. Like, I know everybody
was a start the offseason, by the way.
Right, yeah. Not a very deep class. But, like, I don't know. Like, what surprise? What makes you happy? Are you looking for, like, Nick Martinez on, like, a one-year $12 million deal? You could flip him at the deadline. I don't know. Like, is Eric Fetty do something for you? He was horrible last year. Martinez was also horrible last year. Like, there's a bunch of pitchers that are reclamation projects. There's some decent relievers that could be fun. And then there's a bunch of outfielders that, again, are kind of like, the box. It's like it's broken but could be fun to fix. That's kind of what's left. So unless you're going out and you're getting Framber, which obviously they're not, or like Gio, which, again, they're obviously not, there's just not much left for them to go get other than stuff off the scrap heap. So, who knows?
Okay.
I wanted to get this out. Gallon's being brought up in the count, and I get it, but like, Gallon's got a qualifying offer. So you're going to have to give it. I don't think the Sox are in a position to give up picks on a qualifying offer. No way.
No, not in the, I mean, you're in the throes of a rebuild right now, right? Obviously, there are a lot of pieces that need to be covered. And I think that's a great point. They're just not in a place to be giving up picks because what we've seen the last couple of years is, especially, you know, not just the draft, but outside of the draft, this has been a regime that takes a different approach at signing international players. And during those periods, they're spending more of their money than they ever have, and they're getting more guys than they ever have to, you know, kind of be able to get their eyeballs on some things and hope that you can pick out a handful of diamonds in the rough maybe and get some guys that, you know, could eventually make their way up and be someone. This is not the time to be giving up any kind of picks anywhere, you know, whether it be on comp picks or anything else, to be completely honest with you.
One more name I did want to bring up because it might be fun. Verlander's out there. He's really old. He's chasing wins. If nobody else is going to pick him up, Verlander might be fun. There's my last. That's my insane out of left field take. Verlander might be fun.
Is Verlander the kind of guy that that is going to be like the type of dude who can be a mentor? Because, you know, there are some rumors out there that he's not exactly the nicest dude on the planet.
I don't know if that's true.
I've never met him. So
only way it makes sense is if, yeah, nobody else offers him a contract and he just wants to chase wins on the south side. He's like, I don't know, 40 away. Problem is, he's not on a good enough team to chase wins. It doesn't make a ton of sense, but it would be fun.
Yeah, I was going to say, Chicago's probably not the place you come to chase wins. Let's just be honest.
Nobody else is going
to
give you innings.
You have to score runs for that.
All right, yeah.
All right, I got a question here that I want to address in the chat. James Hesterman asks, does any of the, you know, and this is kind of this is not just him. I've seen a lot of this on Twitter/X. I've seen it on Facebook. A lot of folks are kind of contemplating whether or not Lenin Sosa is a goner with some of these moves. What say you, Jacob Thome?
He could be, but Acuña doesn't change that. Acuña's going to play outfield. He's going to center field. They need an outfielder, and he's fast enough to play out there. The range is good enough. The arm, not great, but good enough. No, Sosa could be gone, but not because of the Acuña stuff.
Ian?
Yeah, that's pretty much where I'm at. I think he's gone regardless. I just don't know. You know, we were actually just talking about this earlier, Elijah, James, and I. And Dylan were talking about this earlier today. And I feel like he's got the most value of the guys that you're willing to trade. Because his pay, you know, his salary is going to be low enough. The bat's good enough. The problem is the guy doesn't play a defensive, you know, he doesn't have like a great defensive position. You can put him at second base and he's okay.
But right, I mean, serviceable, other than that, but that's about it.
May
not even be serviceable, but it's,
yeah, I mean, just,
I mean, when, if you got a second baseman that's putting up 25 home runs, you can deal with a handful of errors is all I'm saying.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's just the defensive aptitude is just not there. The base running aptitude is not there.
That's the big one.
You know, he can swing it for sure. I just don't, you know, we were talking at like what is his value? I mean, I don't even know what you would ask for. And even if you do, like, where are you going to send him? And what are you like? You want to get something back for him because he's one of the integral parts of your offense, I guess. You know, he kind of had a bunch of big hits for the White Sox last year. But at the same point, you know, like, what is it doing for you for the future? You know, I don't know if anything. I was one of the main people who fought for him to get at bats, but the problem being is that yes, he can hit the baseball, which is what I thought he could do. It's just his defensive position has not been clearly defined here
Boneheaded base running plays are just, you know, I had enough of that watching old Nicky Two Strikes and or whatever. Golly, I'm telling you, man, drugs are bad, kids. Drugs are bad. Yeah, the phenom that was a first round pick for the White Sox that you know, apparently was going to have 3,000 hits and 10 dingers in his first season and is now clinging to baseball life, if he has one at all. Watching those base running gaffes in his rookie season were absolutely terrible. But Lenin leaves something to be desired for sure. So, yeah, Nick Madrigal, Lenin Sosa. I don't know if you can compare the two, but the base running gaffes were absolutely atrocious either way you look at it. I've been waiting. We're a little bit behind here. I've been waiting to stick this one up there, but we do have a super chat from Emiliano Brito. Thank you as always, sir. He says, hey, fine shits. I say we just saved that money till Ishbia comes in. Stock the farm system. You know, I don't know. Honestly, it might not be the worst idea because what else is there? What else is there? And are the White Sox really going to, you know, if the past tells us anything, are the White Sox going to spend big money on anything, you know, before a potential lockout in 2027? And, you know, we've heard both sides of that story where, yes, there's no doubt 100% going to be a lockout. And there's the other side of that coin that a lot of people believe there's no chance there's going to be a lockout. I tend to fall on the somewhere in the middle there where I do believe there's going to be a lockout. I just don't think we're going to miss a lot of time, if any at all, as far as regular season games are concerned. So, but yeah, I don't know, man. It's something that remains to be seen, but I am all about building the farm system. And I apologize. Here's another one from Emiliano. I'm just going to go ahead and get these up there. Thank you as always, by the way, sir. We do appreciate the support. You know, even if you guys are out there that are watching and you can't do what Emiliano's doing with the super chats, do us a favor, go ahead and smash that like button, subscribe. It helps us with the algorithms and gets us more views in other places as well, too. So we appreciate that. But anyways, Emiliano says Acuña is just another Miguel Vargas type deal? Question mark.
Is that a question? I would say more like Curtis Mead, but yeah, same type of idea. Or Everson Pereira, honestly, is more on the baseline. I don't think he's as good of a prospect as Vargas was coming over.
You know. He was at one
point. Yeah, at one point. Yeah.
You know, I just, you know, he, and this is a, there are so many caveats here, but, you know, you did see that he just had a 4 home run game in the Venezuelan Winter League. So apparently he has kind of reworked his swing a little bit because he was hitting a lot of ground balls here. Is this going to be the Chuck Garfine thing where he says, oh, he did make a swing change that we're going to hear about through the entire year, like we heard with Vargas last year? I mean, so yeah, possibly this could be exactly like Acuña and Miguel Vargas, where the swing change is the thing that makes him useful. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Jay Hayes says the Sox got fleeced. I don't know if they did.
Or if he gets fleeced, giving up $20 million.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is so, you know, let's kind of look at this from the perspective of the Mets, and then let's look at it from the perspective of the Sox. The Mets took on $20 million for a guy who's been injured often in his career and has not produced anywhere near what he's capable of producing for the last two seasons. The White Sox, on the other hand, got an underperforming, basically a top-rated prospect at one point in his younger years and hasn't really put it together at the MLB level. And then we've got a pitcher who hasn't had an opportunity to prove himself yet, even though I believe he's 21 going on 22 coming out of college year before last. Is that correct? In Pauly?
25.
I think he's
23 now.
Is he? Okay. I thought he was a little bit younger.
Yeah, he's 22 and 26 days.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know if there was a fleecing in one way or the other, either direction. I think it was a move for the Mets where they obviously knew they were taking on some risk, and they're kind of hoping for the better part of that risk to come to fruition. And the White Sox, I think, were just looking to dump salary, get an able body that can play the outfield because there are some holes out there. And, you know, maybe we can turn this pitcher into somebody who can be part of the organization later on, although that remains to be seen because the biggest knock on him, and we can talk about Paulie a little bit between you guys. I don't know how you guys feel about it. Obviously he's got a lot of people seem to think he's got some stuff, but the big knock on him is he's got command issues. So what are your thoughts? Especially I'm going to go to you, Ian, since you are the prospect guy around here. What are your thoughts on Pauly and you know, his potential trajectory?
I mean, he looks interesting. You know, I've seen some numbers on him, and it looks promising. You know, mid-90s fastball and some crazy vertical break, and you know, I mean, there's some stuff to dream on here. Again, you know, as you mentioned, you know, there's some command issues. And you've only seen him, you know, he only pitched 4 innings last year, you know, because he just got drafted. So there's not really you can look at his college tape if you can find anything other than, you know, strikeout here and there, because usually that's all you see is, you know, in those quick highlight clips. But he looks like he, you know, he could be something. But again, you know, yeah, as said in the comments here, lottery pick. You know, we'll see what it is. Oh, Peralta to the Mets. There you go.
Yeah, kind of thought that might happen, but there you go. The Mets are obviously going for it.
That's a shame with that owner.
Sort of.
I'm sorry. Was I not? Tongue in cheek enough on that? Was my sarcasm not?
I mean,
obvious?
You know, just I don't know. they let Pete Alonso walk out the door. So how much are they really going for it? You know,
and scooped up the legend Luis Robert Jr.
Yeah.
So yeah, their outfield is questionable across the board. Honestly, there's. You know, there's high potential for all of those guys, but there's risk with all of them as well, too. So I don't know if, I really don't know what's going on over there. But they got an owner that likes to spend money, and an owner who, you know, apologized to his fan base as the season ended last year about, we're trying to do some things, but I'm sorry it didn't work out, and we're going to keep trying, but... I honestly have no idea what they're thinking over there. To be completely,
yeah. I mean, I'm not, you know, really. I'm not the biggest guy on Bo Bichette personally. So their off season moves, I question them letting Pete Alonso walk. You know, I don't know if it's, it's not. Bichette is not a replacement for Alonso, as far as I'm concerned, but you know, we'll see how that goes as the year progresses.
No, yeah. So, I guess that that's gonna, you know, we're getting close to an hour here. We're a little over 45 minutes or so. I might as well throw out my take on this whole trade, since I've been kind of biting my tongue and holding back and letting you guys drive the bus here, but. My thing is, and a few of you in the chat will know, and maybe even one of the people on the panel here will know, that I immediately said I thought this was a terrible trade. And I think you were in on that, Ian. Were you not when I said that?
Yeah.
My thought on this whole thing, and I get it. You know, there's a lot of people that are like, let's just move on from Luis Robert Jr. He's the last piece of the last regime. Fine. You know, whatever. Let's dump the salary. And the whole time I keep hearing this, I'm thinking to myself, our payroll's at $87 million right now. And we have been trying to talk ourselves into this idea that the smaller market teams are driving the offseason right now, and everybody keeps saying the White Sox are winning the offseason, or one of the teams that are winning the offseason with an $87 million payroll. And Jake and I, and we were in agreement on this, maybe, you know, some of these moves that some of the smaller market teams were making was to get ahead of this upcoming CBA negotiation and make it look like the smaller market teams and we're don't worry, we don't need a salary floor because we're going to spend. And my first thought at the end of this whole thing is, we traded Luis Robert Jr. away and dumped his $20 million option after picking it up, by the way. Didn't need to be picked up, right?
Well, yeah, but.
But they trade this $20 million option away for Luis Angel Acuña, which, sure, he's got, what, 4 or 5 years of control, whatever it is.
I think you have to look at this math, though, is that what they did by picking up that option is they didn't pay $2 million for that option. So they didn't pay $2 million for that option. They agreed to pay 20 this year, and then there was $2 million also that they didn't have to pay on next year for buying out his option. So technically, they saved themselves $2 million by picking up that option, and then they got two guys for free.
Oh, I mean, you still have to pay those guys, but yeah, for the, you know.
Yeah, not much.
Yeah, not much for either one of them. You're absolutely
right. They're at $81,020,000 right now.
So, you know, at the end of the day, the reality is my take is we could have picked these. We could have picked up similar players for the money that they cost. You didn't need to trade Luis Robert Jr. You didn't have to sign Luis Robert Jr. to $20 million. And then, and I get what you're saying, your math with the whole $2 million thing, you saved that money. But at the end of the day, Jerry Reinsdorf, I just feel like for a move like this, and people are ecstatic that Luis Robert Jr. is gone because your owner is not willing to go north of $100 million on his payroll. That's what I take away from this at the end of the day. Your owner is a freaking cheapskate. Plain and simple. What I mean, say you? I see the gears. I see the gears working. So, Jake, I want to hear from you because Ian's pretty much kind of put out there how he feels about that. And maybe he hasn't. Maybe you have something you want to add. I don't know. But what do you think, Jake?
Yeah, it's a bad owner trade, a good GM trade. I mean, it shouldn't have happened if you had a better owner. But unfortunately, Chris Getz is handcuffed by Jerry Reinsdorf. And so Chris Getz has got to work with what he's got to work with, and that's what he's got to work with. I don't know. I mean, I get it. It's your take is very common on social media. But at the end of the day, like, if you're the general manager of the Chicago White Sox, you got to do what's best for right now. And unfortunately, you kind of have to get to wherever you need to get to be able to bring in guys or whatever they're trying to do. If there was a budget, like if this was potentially the move for Mune and it just took forever to get done and it had to be done, then sure, fine. I'd rather have Mune on the team than keep Robert around. But it's disappointing that you have to do this because Jerry's your owner, but nothing you can do about it, unfortunately, until Ishbia takes over.
Yep, yeah. I gotcha. I mean, Southside Jeff says it's just Getz playing the cards he was dealt, and you know, you're not wrong. It's just some of it's a bit perplexing to me. It's not even perplexing. It's just frustrating being a White Sox fan and watching the way that this team still operates. And, you know, in the beginning, I was a little tough on Getz. I've come around to him. I like what Getz is doing with what he's been given. But the fact remains he's not being given everything that he could use to his full potential. So, I'm sorry, Ian, it sounded like you had something you wanted to say.
Well, I mean, you take the job with the White Sox. You know what you're getting yourself into. You deal with the constraints that you're given. And he took that job. He probably campaigned for the job while the other GM was still in the office, you know? And knowing full well exactly what he was going to be dealing with when he got that job. So, I mean, and exactly, as he says, it's $20 million for somebody that you don't know is going to be available and on a team that you don't expect to, you know, even go 500. Is it really worth the investment? Like, what's the difference between winning 70 games and winning 75 games at that point, you know?
Absolutely.
So.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we're about 55 minutes in. Before we wrap this thing up, do you guys have anything that you feel like you need to get off your chest? You want to get out there, Jake?
Shout out to Toss for re-upping his membership. I saw that earlier. We didn't get to it, so I wanted to give a shout out. Anything I want to get off my chest? No, hot take. Sox signed someone this week.
Oh, there it is. It worked so many weeks in a row. So
I mean, technically they traded somebody this week. So like, I guess just the Sox bring in a new player. I don't know. Okay. Technically they signed like whatever that minor league guy was.
Baruki.
Yeah, whatever. He's not a minor league guy. He has major league experience, but it's kind of a minor league deal. But certainly they signed someone. Anyway, that's all I have.
Anything you'd like to get off your chest, Ian? Anything you would like to touch on with this trade that we haven't covered already?
About the trade, no, not really.
What else would you like to talk about?
The last thing I'd like to get off my chest is just that is the last guy of the initial the re-rebuilds core. You know, you look back on it and what a disappointment. Not even one of those cornerstone guys from that entire core, not one of them even remotely worked out. It's you know, other than like a small window of like a year or two. It's pretty sad, pretty awful. Yeah.
Would you even call it 2 years? Like 2020 was a 60.
I'm just saying, like, you know, like Tim Anderson had like a good couple of years, you know. I mean, Jose Abreu had some solid years, but when the entire thing, I mean, I want to look back now and the core of like Eloy, Luis Robert, Yoan Moncada, Jose Abreu, and TA, I'd like to see like how many of those guys, like how many games those five guys played together over that entire time. It has to be like the most minuscule of games ever by your, yes, you know, your core pieces of your team. It is.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, had ridiculous. They been able to stay healthy and stay on the field all together at the same time, we might've had a different, you know, outlook at all of this. It might've been a completely different result. You know, I know during the time of Rick Hahn's regime and, you know, going back to like 2018 when things were really moving on that last rebuild, there was a lot of hope. You know, they sold us these, you know, floating on a cloud dreams. You know what I mean? And we were all pretty excited about it. I know you and I, Ian, when we first started podcasting together years ago, we're feeling pretty good about where the White Sox were going. And I know we were not the only ones. And it's unfortunate that none of that materialized the way we had hoped for. So, you know, again, shout out to Chris Getz and doing the things that he's doing and fixing the organization first. And then, you know, getting up to speed on adding more staff and adding more tech and, you know, maybe even helping convince MLB that they should be hoping to pay for the tech or limiting what teams can spend on tech that just come out this year and making sure that everybody's on a even playing field when it comes to that kind of thing. So, yeah, I don't know. It's just it's cool to see the direction of the ball club now. I just hope that we're not getting set up for disappointment again. But I think the structural changes within the organization are probably a better direction than we've ever been in before. So that gives me a little bit of hope and a little bit less pause. But yeah, it's about that time. I think if you guys, Jake, you've already given us a hot take. Ian, do you have a hot take or a heater for us before we sign out tonight?
Not really. I had a complaint.
Okay. Good enough for me. My hot take was pretty much exactly my take on this whole thing is, you know, it just sucks that we have an owner that refuses to spend any money. And I know now's not the time to actually do that, but the fact remains that it has now been 45 years of ownership. And we saw one, substantial contract signed in Albert Bell back in the day, and he traded that contract away a year later. So really, what is that?
Released.
Yeah, Right. So, right. Released a year later. So what does that really
catch
say
and release
about that? You know, I don't know, man. It's just, I can't wait for the Ishbia regime to, kind of rear its head and see where that goes. And who knows, it might not be anything what we expect it to be, but if what his brother is doing over there in Phoenix is any indication, I think we will probably be a little bit happier as Sox fans. Results still remain, but you know, we'll see how that goes. So what do you guys think? Should we put a bow on it? Nothing left? All right, cool. Well, as always, we would like to thank our chatters this evening. You guys have been absolutely amazing. Shout out to Emiliano for multiple super chats tonight. We always appreciate the support. Again, if you cannot financially support us, please go ahead and hit that like and subscribe button. That will help us. Pardon me, I'm a little sick. So that will help us with the algorithms and views. You know, tell a friend. If you guys like the content, get some drive some traffic over here. We appreciate that. If you like our written content, we do have that stuff over at futuresox.net. And there's also some exclusive stuff for a small Patreon donation. A couple of shows every week. You'll see us, Hot Takes and Heaters, every Wednesday at 8 p.m. You'll also see Ian and James on Sunday evenings, as well as the Future Sox Roundup with Elijah, Dylan, and I guess Jeff is kind of in and out these days. But,
sometimes.
Yeah, but you guys can check that out as well. Again, we appreciate y'all. Our merch is now available. You should see that on the channel as we speak. Go ahead and check that out. And as always, until next time, go White Sox.